Hello and welcome to the One Short Cricket Podcast, the Sports Gazette's official cricket podcast. I'm Toby, joined as ever by Ayush. How are you, mate?
I'm doing well, Toby. How's everything with you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, we're also joined by Michael. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thinking about Ayush and Sunny at this hard time, but yeah, I'm good.
I think you could get it a little bit from our tones, and Sunny more than me. We'll talk about that later, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about on this podcast. Obviously, the World Cup final took place yesterday, and what a final it was. Two great sides going up against each other, and the Australians came out on top. Ayush and Sunny, obviously both big Indian fans, a bit disappointed. How are you guys feeling, and what do you think the biggest problem was for this Indian side, or was it just luck and they lost to a sort of a better side and in a lucky circumstance?
Well, I think combination of two things. One was definitely that the conditions played their part. And the moment that Australia batted first in those conditions, they were the favourites. It was, I think, a very good toss to win for them. Even though Rohit Sharma at the toss said that he would have anyway batted first had he won the toss. But I think that was more of a mind game more than anything, because batting first on that wicket was, batting second on that wicket, I think, was the way to go. We even saw it with the first match that it was, in a way, the way the tournament started, it ended that way as well. England, New Zealand played the first match of the tournament at this wicket, where you could see England struggling with the conditions, slow, two-paced wicket when England batted. And then Devon Conway and Rachin Ramindra came in and absolutely smashed the England bowling. It was a completely different wicket in the second innings altogether. So this pitch has behaved a little bit two-paced and unpredictable that way. But I think more than anything, it is just the Australian way of doing things. And it is the mentality, in my opinion, is what separated the two sides yesterday. Australia, I mean, every time I think the biggest mistake in cricket is to write an Australian team off. All of us, so many of us did that after especially the first two games. And once again, just like it was the case a couple of years ago when they won the T20 World Cup in the UAE, everyone had written them off because they were, let's be honest, they even at this ODI World Cup, they were far from being the best team of the tournament, but they found a way. And that's what Australia does. Their Pat Cummins spot on with his captaincy. Their fielding was on point. Everyone contributing in some of the other ways. So yeah, more than anything, it was just Australia too superior on the day.
Yeah, well, are you suddenly, how do you think the Indians played, and what could they have done to win the World Cup, do you think?
Well, to win the World Cup, we had to win that final match, which we didn't. Like, I read an article on BBC Sport about this yesterday, it said that the Cricket World Cup ended the same way it began, with a sense of hollowness and emptiness in the biggest cricketing venue in the world. Like, this time in the final, the emptiness was in Indian people's minds. And in the first match, it was literally empty. I'm just trying to process it all right now, because we were hopeful of a win against Australia, especially when playing at home with all the crowd support, 130,000 Indian fans at the biggest cricketing stadium on earth. So that was a bit anticlimactic.
At least it was a lot more busy than the first game of the tournament, I'll say. I mean, what, 100,000 Indian fans seemed to be enjoying the spectacle for the majority of it, I think, until the Travis Head Marnus Labuschagne partnership sort of began to silence them a bit. Michael, I've been having a look at the Ahmedabad results from the tournament. They held five matches over the World Cup. Four of them were won by the chasing side. New Zealand beat England by 9 wickets. Pakistan lost to India by 7 wickets. Afghanistan lost to South Africa by 5 wickets. And then obviously the final yesterday. Only Australia beat England at that stadium. Do you think that Sharma would have actually batted first, as Ayush mentioned, or do you think it maybe would have been more of a sort of a double bluff and sort of trying to show a bit of confidence in his side?
Yeah, that's an interesting stat. I didn't realise that was the case. So that's really interesting. I think India are a chasing team anyway, you know, no matter the pitch. I think generally in the tournament, in my opinion, they've looked better when they've chased. They've had some really comfortable wins chasing. You know, if you look back to when Australia played India in the first match of the tournament, it wasn't a comfortable chase. Australia had India 8 for 2, but the difference was Kohli and Rahul got in and they had a target. You know, they knew how they had to bat to reach Australia's total. So it's a totally different ball game when you're chasing. And, you know, we saw that yesterday with Travis Head and Labuschagne. It was a bit anticlimactic, I'd say. It was a bit of a boring final, maybe. After, I mean, the India innings was exciting, just seeing all the Australia wickets. But yeah, once Head and Labuschagne got in, you kind of knew there was an inevitability about it. It wasn't to be. It's just one of those things, really. At the end of the day, Australia were the better team on the day, and that's what it comes down to in the final. Oh yes, India were by far the best team in the tournament, but it's a final. The best team on the day wins it, and Australia deservedly take that trophy home.
Let's start at the beginning of the game. Rohit Sharma got India off to an absolute flyer, Ayush. 47 from 31, almost trying too hard to be too aggressive, it felt like at times. But he definitely seemed to be the most free-flowing batter on the day. Do you think that he was trying to show the rest of his team how to bat? Him and Iyer were the only batters really to score it faster than run a ball. Or do you think maybe he should have realised the wicket wasn't as strong and as good as he thought and tried to bat along with throughout the innings?
So it really is an interesting one with Rohit's innings yesterday, like you mentioned, you know. I think he really set the tone throughout the tournament for this new age Indian batting template, I should say. The way that they've played, it showed with Shreyas Iyer's batting as well, with, you know, the way KL Rahul also played so many of his innings throughout the World Cup. But and it was the way to start, and it came off again yesterday. He's gotten a lot of these 40s and 50s in this tournament, quick fire ones, 30, 40 ball 40s and 50s, but he did the same thing yesterday. But I do feel that sensing how the wicket was, it wasn't a wicket like we saw in the semi-finals at Wankhede or some of the other ones that the team has batted on in past matches. Right from the start, India knew that this one's not the easiest of pitches, that this one's not going to be a 350 wicket or something like that. So there, I mean, I did feel that, okay, once he's set, because once Rohit gets past 50 or 60, we all know what he can do. And it doesn't matter what kind of wicket he's playing on, if it's slow, if it's two-paced. In that situation, I just felt like, you know, maybe he could have stayed on a little bit longer, especially if you look at his dismissal. He hit Maxwell for 6 for 4. All credit to Maxwell to kind of take the gamble and again, you know, invite him with a flighted delivery for him to go after. And he did just that. He took the bait and yeah, Travis Head's catch was out of this world, especially in a World Cup final. But yeah, Australia were rewarded, I should say, for their bravery. And I think maybe over there, Rohit Sharma could have done a little better, especially knowing that, okay, Shreyas Iyer is playing his first World Cup final, there's going to be nerves. Surya Kumar Yadav wasn't really tested throughout the tournament. And all of those things eventually did backfire. So others could have, especially I think maybe KL Rahul at some stage could have really taken a cue from Rohit Sharma, even Ravindra Jadeja when he came into bat. Another guy who wasn't tested at all. But yesterday, especially, I felt if he could have carried on for at least 10 or 15 more overs, it could have been a difference of at least 45 to 50 runs.
Which would have probably taken it to at least a par score and a much more defendable total, with the Australians knowing that it had to go a bit harder throughout, and Labuschagne wouldn't have just sort of gone dead bat and tried to bat through test style. Sonny, KL Rahul, as Ayush mentioned, almost went a completely opposite approach to Rohit Sharma. He scored 66 from 107, pretty much test match style batting. Do you think that he maybe, once Kohli was out as well and he was batting with a bit more sort of the lower order batters, he maybe should have tried to be a bit more proactive? Or do you think he batted pretty much as well as he could have done in the circumstances?
Well, I think a bit of both things. He was trying to preserve the wicket as well as trying to, you know, put a big score on the board, but he wasn't able to do that because he was, like you said, he was playing a test match innings, I guess, and he was playing in an ODI. And at one point, I also started questioning whether this guy should be on the pitch or not. He was using too many balls in such circumstances when you're playing a final against Australia. Even though he was playing at home, he had a sense of pressure after Rohit and Virat went back to the pavilion. So yeah, I think that pressure got to him. That's why he played that innings. He tried to preserve the wicket and just defend whatever was happening. Like Ayush said earlier, that Shreyas Iyer and I think to an extent Shubman Gill also. These guys are really young lads playing a World Cup final at home, so nerves can be quite apparent with these people. But I do hope that in the coming years they'll acclimatize and then just go with the flow.
This Indian lineup has a very good mixture of experience and youth, so there will be a lot more for them to go forward with, and with the T20 World Cup next year and Champions Trophy the year after that. I think they've got a very good base to build off of. Michael, Virat Kohli and Kel Rahul put on the best part of 50 together and was probably the strongest partnership within the side. How did you think Kohli batted? And he obviously got a very, very good ball from Pat Cummins that just climbed on him a bit too much as he was trying to run it down to third man. Were you impressed with how he batted? He obviously ended up as the leading run scorer in the World Cup as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's between him and KL Rahul, who was the best Indian batter on the day. But the issue Kohli had for me is that there's so much pressure on him. If Shubman Gill and Rohit Sharma go out, kind of, you know, Shubman Gill only put four runs on, goes out early. There's so much pressure on Kohli then to have a good innings, because if Kohli goes out and there's a few more wickets fall, the tail is just so poor for India in terms of batting. Mohammad Shami came in number seven. Am I right in saying that, number seven?
Number eight, I think he was.
Number eight, yeah. Either way, he came in when they were on, 200 runs. That shouldn't be happening. They were definitely too reliant on their top batsmen, and I think that definitely played a part in how the top order bat, because you have to bat more conservatively when there's not that kind of quality beneath you in the order. I think Kohli is my player of the tournament. I think he's had an amazing tournament. It's been his tournament, I think. It's just a shame he couldn't lift the trophy. So yeah, he was good yesterday, and I think probably the standout Indian batter along with Kel Rahul.
Yeah, the Indian tail was, well, as we've talked about a lot, to be fair, since that Hardik injury and Thakur therefore being dropped, can be exposed, and it was pretty much their one weakness, you could argue. Shirakumar Yadav as well came in for Pandya when he got injured, Ayush. That was quite a big loss, that Pandya injury, and Sky really struggled, 18 from 28 yesterday. He didn't really seem to know when to attack and when to defend, and got bogged down quite a lot, not really finding the best shots, which is saying quite a lot when you know he's probably got one of the biggest artillery of shots within, or shot selection possible at the World Cup.
I mean, Suryakumar Yadav's innings yesterday was, I think, a summary of his ODI career so far. It's just that, you know, it's a battle in his mind right now of how to approach an ODI innings. Whether, you know, he should just go out there from ball one, play freely, that the way he plays in T20 cricket, which can be a gamble, especially in situations like the one yesterday, when it comes to ODI cricket, or then, you know, just stay there, bide his time, and then try to go big. Yesterday, he definitely had to play the situation, and you could see on that wicket, the ball, what it was doing with the skill that the Australians had, it was a problem for him. Hardik, and I thought yesterday, and, you know, I was watching the match with Sunny, Manas, and a couple of others, and I told them that this situation is tailor-made for Hardik Pandya. He thrives in such situations. And he is definitely, I think, even a better batter at that position than Suryakumar Yadav in this format. Coming in at the number 6, 7, whenever he can come in. And I mean, he would have known the exact way to kind of, you know, compile that innings. It's a different thing that is bowling also. India could have really used his bowling yesterday. And the thing that I really feared as soon as Hardik Pandya announced, you know, that he would not be playing for the rest of the tournament a few weeks ago, all of that, you know, it all kind of hit back at India when it shouldn't have. The one match when it shouldn't have, and that was the final. So yeah, Surya Kumar, I think, yeah, it was just that he was very much, you know, unsure of how he had to approach that with and constantly with wickets falling at the other end, because he came in after Jadeja, but then he lost Jadeja and then so many others. And then he was, I think he was the ninth wicket then to fall. So quite a few guys, at least a couple of them got out, you know, along, I mean, while he was at the other end, and there was just more pressure building. And I think the Australians play the situation perfectly. They know sky scoring shots. They know where to bowl and where not to bowl to him. And on this wicket, especially, they use the combination of what they knew about him and what the wicket was doing and completely bogged him down. So yeah, another guy playing his first World Cup final and the pressure told.
Sonny, I just mentioned it there, but Pat Cummins' captaincy, I thought, was very impressive throughout the game. Obviously, a slight gamble in at the toss, sort of choosing maybe what a lot of people wouldn't have expected from the Australian side. He then, I thought, mixed up his bowlers very well, brought Maxwell in before himself, before Adam Zampa, to try and get that crucial wicket of Rohit Sharma, which it seemed to work out very well. And he's actually brought Maxwell in quite early a lot of the times, it seems. And then, yeah, mixing up the bowling. Were you impressed with Pat Cummins? And do you think that maybe his captaincy was the difference in the game compared to maybe Sharma, who maybe made a few mistakes throughout as well?
Yeah, I think definitely. Yesterday, he was the standout captain. And also, I guess, the standout player as well when Australia were fielding in the first innings. Because a day earlier in the press conference, I think he had said that there's nothing more satisfying than silencing a crowd which is 130,000 strong. And at that time, I thought that, is he being a bit overconfident that, okay, we're in the final and we'll silence this Indian crowd. But he and the rest of the Aussies managed to do just that, which, like, I give credit to them because they came in our own backyard and beat us in the final. And his captaincy was spot on, I guess. And Rohit crumbled when those pressure situations came to confront him in the second innings as well. You could see it on his face and in his body language as well. And it's a bit disheartening to see such a great player not having won a World Cup, because he deserved this one and the entire team as well. But yeah, it leaves a bitter taste in our mouths that we were so close to, within touching distance of that Cricket World Cup, and we couldn't just take that last title, having a bad day at the office at the very end.
Yeah, a large core of that Indian side definitely, well, almost definitely won't be playing in another World Cup. Sharma turns 37 fairly soon. Shami's pretty on the older side of things. Jadeja, Ashwin, who obviously didn't play that big a part in the tournament, unlikely to play another ODI. Even Surya Kumar Yadav's 33, Virat Kohli as well. So they still have a lot of youth within that squad who they'll be able to utilise. But I think this is almost the end of an era for the Indian side. On the other side of things, Michael, though, this Australian side, over the last sort of cycle, the last 4 years, they've won a T20 World Cup, an ODI World Cup, and a World Test Championship, which seems somewhat crazy when you look back a few years ago. A lot of them hadn't really proven themselves, it seems, on the big stage. And then they've gone and won three major tournaments in as many years. How impressed have you been by this Australian side generally? And obviously, Pat Cummins is a major factor. He'd only captained two ODIs before they turned up to India before the tournament. And he's going to win a World Cup at his first go of trying.
Yeah, he's doing a pretty good job in this captaincy gig. You know, he's making it look quite easy. Yeah, like you said, World Test Championship at the start of this year. Retained the Ashes in the summer. Controversial circumstances, of course. Not really deserved, but... And now he's won the ODI World Cup, which he has called the pinnacle. Yeah, fair play to him. You know, they seem to just find a way to win. Because they never look outstanding. You know, they've always they always seem like they've got weaknesses in there. You know, when you compare them to India, India this tournament, they just look like they've got everything. You know, I mean, I know they said, I said their tail isn't very good. Maybe that's their weakness, but India just look like they're on another level. When you compare Australia, there's clear weaknesses there, but maybe it's a mentality thing. You know, they just find a way to get through. You know, the likes of Glenn Maxwell having making 201 against Afghanistan, which was just incredible. Like, stories like that are that's the sort of thing that wins you a World Cup. It's those big player moments, and I'm not sure. Maybe other countries just are lacking that. You know, we've seen with England's dominance recently, you know, in white ball, it's coincided with Ben Stokes becoming one of the best players in the world. You know, like, you need those players that will just have these miracle moments who are going to win the tournaments. So, yeah, I think they've done really well the last few years. They've won 5 of the last 7 ODI World Cups as well, which is crazy stat. It's been their tournament in this in the 2000s for sure. So yeah, hats off to Australia. Definitely surprising a lot of people.
The obvious player of the match and standout player within arguably the knockout stage of this tournament was Travis Head. Ayush, 137 off 120, made scoring seem pretty easy. Attacked early on, went back into his shell after Australia lost a few wickets, and then towards the end just went ballistic and dismantled the Indian bowling attack. How impressed were you with him? He won the man of the match in the final and the semi-final and scored 100 after returning from injury. He's been absolutely fantastic for the short period of time he's been playing in this World Cup.
I'd also like to give a shout out to you, Toby. A couple of nights before the final, you said that Travis Head is definitely one of the contenders for player of the tournament, and he proved you right in the final when it mattered the most. So yeah, he was so good. It's just, you know, in the semi-finals, it was, you know, in that low score, his batting was important, but his bowling was so important. We spoke about it the other day, the two crucial wickets that he got in that semi against South Africa. Then he comes up yesterday, takes what was probably a match-defining catch of sorts with Rohit Sharma, and that was such a great catch, very difficult, running backwards and, you know, on the dive. And it was so good to watch. And then his batting. And it wasn't just, I mean, Travis Head is known, what's most impressive about him is that, you know, he's known for being that explosive kind of batter, you know, especially in Test cricket, that's his role. He comes in at number 5 and his job is to attack, play at least a run a ball or close to run a ball and take the attack to the opposition. So Travis Head is kind of Australia's flag bearer of the baseball style in Test cricket. But, you know, yesterday he showed a lot of maturity. I think that's what impressed me the most. It wasn't, you could see it while there was that phase where he really had to, you know, stick it out. He really had to stay there and just defend balls with Bumrah, Shami, move, just making the ball talk the way they wanted in those first 10, 12 overs. And after that as well, with spinners just came in, it was still a very, you know, a very nervy phase for the Australians at what, 40, 45-ish for 3. He knew he had to carry on and he showed such maturity at the time. It wasn't that he went into a complete shell, I would say, like we saw with KL Rahul. Travis Head's intent was still there. He was still going after his shots. And at the same time, he was still, you know, making sure that he got singles, twos, every opportunity that he got. Less number of dot balls, just kept rotating the strike along with Manas Labuschagne. And his maturity, while during that testing phase as well, his intent didn't go for a toss. It was still there. He was scoring slowly, but he was still putting the pressure on the Indian fielders and the bowlers continuously and constantly working some of the weaker fielders and making sure that he takes singles or twos wherever he could. So throughout this tournament, I mean, it's just, you come back after a fractured hand, and then he comes back, scores 100 in the first game, and then the final, and so many important innings in the middle. So it already showed where his confidence is, and, you know, the kind of vibe that there is in this Australian team as well, where everyone knows their roles, and there is that confidence, that support from Cummins as the captain, McDonald as a coach, and the rest of the staff. But the Travis Head specifically, he's become really mature. So just fantastic to see how he's done. And it's actually a shame, because this tournament really should have had a lot more of Travis Head right from the start. We could have seen a lot more special performances from him if he would have gotten a chance to play from the first match.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame. He's been absolutely amazing throughout the whole tournament. He scored 329 runs from just six games, averaging over 50 in the end, which is, I mean, mighty impressive. My outside bet is, although he's only a year and a half younger than Pat Cummins, I can see him being Australian captain, at least in the white ball stuff, at some point. He was obviously vice captain for a while, got injured, and then never really got the vice captaincy back. But he seems to be a good leader within the side if they gave him that sort of vice captaincy fairly young as well. And I think particularly in the white ball setup, maybe the T20s, now that Aaron Finch, retired last year, I think it was. So maybe for the World Cup, he could be an outside bet as a captain. But Sonny, when Australia were 47 for three, how were you feeling?
I was just screaming and jumping up and down and creating a racket inside the TV lounge where we all were watching the match. Ayush told me later that a couple of girls sitting in the back, they were scared that what's happening over here? Why are these guys creating a racket? What's happening? And yeah, that was a really one of the good moments for me in the match. But everything from there went downhill as Travis Head and Lau Shen, and then obviously Maxwell, all of them. Travis Head and Lau Shen stitched up a really crucial partnership, and that just took the match away from us.
What do you think went wrong for the Indian side? Was there anything specific, or just Travis Head and Manas Lau Shen just batted impeccably?
They were quite persistent, as you're saying. Travis Head scored 137 in what I think 120 balls. So he knew that the score isn't unachievable. We don't have to, you know, go all guns blazing in this thing. We just need to keep calm and just keep scoring runs, a single, a double, a boundary every over. That'll get us over the line. And that's what eventually happened. Like, they took a very calm approach inside that sea of blue.
They definitely didn't let the situation get to their heads, which was, I think, very impressive. Before this, Michael, Marnus was possibly being talked about being dropped, probably the weakest batter within the ODI setup, and definitely the least ODI ready. Do you think that actually the situation and the pitch just played perfectly into his hands, knowing that all he had to do was be there at the end, and Travis Head would be the one who could score at the rate that they needed to keep them in the game, and he just had to be there to marshal the rest of the chase?
Yeah, it was perfectly set up for him, I think. I think he's definitely a test batsman, but he could bat this game out like it was a test match. Yeah, just kind of say, go on, Travis, do your thing. I'll be here with you, you know, the whole time. I'm not going to get out, don't worry. Yeah, to be fair, I think Lau Shen actually hasn't been as bad as people think this tournament. I think Steve Smith has been Australia's worst batsman quite comfortably. I think he's been absolutely terrible this tournament. Lau Shen, in the games that Australia have really struggled, he seems to kind of be the one that kind of puts on about a 60 or a 70. Like against England, he scored 71. Against the Netherlands, he scored 62. He was kind of clinging on whilst all the other Australia batters kind of fell apart around him. I think that's what Lau Shen gives you. You know, it's security, and it's what Steve Smith maybe gave you a few years ago. You know, like some of these players, when they're on form, you just can't get them out. I mean, I know, and in a chase like that, when you're chasing a low score, like early 200s, those are the players you want and you need, because they're just going to put on, you know, a half century or a century at 50 strike rate. But that's all you need. You just need people that won't get out. And it was perfectly set up for him. I think one of the Australian cricket journalists before the game, he kind of listed all the things that Australia have to do to win. And one of them was actually play Marnus Lau Shen, because he's one of your best run getters, which is interesting. because, you know, like I remember before on the podcast we did previewing the final, me and you, Toby, both said either Labuschagne or Smith should be dropped for an all-rounder like Stoinis or Green, just because of massively improved strike rate that those all-rounders will give you. We've said it before in the podcast, but in ODI and T20, you don't want Smith and Labuschagne in your team. You know, it's too slow, it's too boring. But it worked out for Australia yesterday. I guess these are the occasions where you want a safe pair of hands, a Labuschagne, just partnering up with Travis Head and in the match winning World Cup winning partnership. So yeah, hats off to the Australia selectors, and hats off to the Australia selectors as well for putting Travis Head in the squad at the start of the tournament, even though he had a broken finger. I mean, could they see into the future? How did they know that Travis Head was going to come back and become this, you know, tournament winning player? Like, it's crazy. They're like mystics, these guys. So fair play to them.
Yeah, it would have been absolutely mental if Travis Head hadn't been fit all tournament, and they maybe had another injury somewhere and just turned out they didn't have a big enough squad and ended up having to play a bit of a mixed side. I think the one thing that maybe the selectors knew or knew they had in the back pocket was the number of all-rounders they had. Neither Stoinis nor Cam Green played today, nor did Alex Carey. And Sean Abbott, who's a half-decent batter as well. So I think they kind of knew that because their squad was so deep in so many ways that they could almost get away with carrying someone like Travis Head, who was only going to be fit for the second half of the tournament, which definitely by the end of the tournament seemed like the best idea ever. And he's pretty much single-handedly, no pun intended, won the World Cup. Let's have a look, I think, at some of our predictions before the World Cup, which have all been some mixed success, I think is the best way to put it. We'll start with yours, Ayush. I think you probably had the best outcome with yours. You, like myself, said England were going to win, which didn't come very true. But you did call Virat Kohli as the leading run scorer. He won by an absolute mile in the end.
Well, our England prediction was really, really bad. Just kind of reiterating that. But yeah, with Virat Kohli, it's just that you saw the way he performed in the build-up to the World Cup, right? Especially the Asia Cup and some of the other tournaments where you could just sense the way he was batting that Virat Kohli is completely in the mood and he's on a mission. Especially after those couple of years of a really lean patch by his standards that he had had. And after that, he had finally found, his form again. And it just like he was a lot free in his mind more than anything else. The way he's batted this year across formats, but especially in the ODIs and the build-up to the World Cup. And when Virat Kohli, when you look at him and you feel that, okay, Virat Kohli is in that kind of a mood, it's difficult to bet against him. And I think that's why I went with Virat, especially in these conditions playing in India. I know he is one of those guys, and that's what makes him one of the greatest of all time, is that conditions don't really matter to him. But especially when he's playing at home, you know that, yeah, Virat Kohli is really going to want to try to own this tournament. I didn't see him scoring, 800 runs at the end of it, what it was, yeah? And 400s could have easily been 600s throughout the tournament, a couple of 80s, 90s that he missed. So, I mean, I didn't see 800 runs coming, breaking that all-time record, but eventually, there were parallels between the World Cup and what happened to him in the 2016 IPL, right? I mean, no one would have ever seen anyone score 950 runs in one IPL, and he still ends up not winning the title and loses in the final. The same thing happened in the World Cup. So that's really unfortunate for him. But yeah, I think Virat, he just looked in the mood before the World Cup.
It's weird. I was on the other boat. I kind of assumed that he might have capitulated a little bit, but I mean, you called it right, and that's very impressive. You also went for Ravi Jadeja as the player of the World Cup, who was pretty impressive, took 16 wickets, same as Mitch Stark, who you thought would be the leading wicket taker. And Jadeja also came in handy with a bat a little bit at times. He wasn't quite as standout maybe as he could have been, though, I'd say.
Yeah, well, with Jadeja, I really thought at the start of the tournament when we were discussing these things, that I actually expected his batting him to bat a lot more than he eventually ended up batting in this tournament. And I really thought that there would be a few matches, at least a couple of matches, where Jadeja would win it with the bat. And I think that the only time he actually, apart from yesterday, where he actually got, you know, real considerable batting time and got the opportunity to show what he could do with the bat, was I think that match against New Zealand, where he really held one end towards the end when he and Kohli got going after a few wickets fell, and he did really well. He got a 30-odd, almost 40-odd runs and saw India through. And then there was, I think, another game which was, I can't think of it, he scored a very quick fire, 25-30. I think it was against Sri Lanka, but he got a really quick fire score there as well. So that was that. But that's why I thought that Jadeja, you know, would come in handy with both bat and ball. Bowling, very good. Maybe there were, even with the bowling, there were a couple of matches where he could have done a little bit more. And again, that's, I mean, 16 wickets is still really good, given that most of the work was being done by the likes of Shami, Bumrah to start off with, and then Siraj as well on a few occasions. But when Shami and Bumrah were getting so many wickets, there were very few for Ravindra Jadeja to eventually end up getting. So that way, 16 wickets was really good. But yeah, could have had a better tournament. And again, it's difficult to say. At the end of the day, the team could have very easily won yesterday, and he would have still been one of the key performers of the tournament.
I think it's almost credit to the Indian lineup that they didn't need Jadeja to bat that often. And that was almost maybe a downfall by the end of it, where Sirikumar Yadav hadn't really batted that much. Their tail hadn't been exposed to a huge amount. And when it came to the big occasion, they couldn't quite sort of, they weren't prepared for it almost. But I think it showed that how strong their top five was, and possibly one of the top five batting lineups ever in World Cup history. Now, Michael, you put a lot of your eggs in the basket of Pakistan. You predicted them to win the whole tournament and Babrizam to be both player of the tournament and score the most runs. He ended up averaging 40 with the bat, which isn't too bad at all, really, when you sort of look at the grand scheme of things. And alongside Mohammad Rizwan was probably one of Pakistan's most prolific run scorers. Do you think that in hindsight you maybe could have seen it coming, or is it just one of those that Pakistan just was so up and down, they didn't really find any form in the end?
Yeah, honestly, that prediction was just a gut feeling. It was just like, I just went with my gut. I know he averaged 40, but I don't think that tournament could have gone much worse for Babrizam, to be honest. We don't know if he was sacked as captain, but he probably was. And they had a bit of a stinker, but they got two more points than England, and you guys predicted England to win. So that's the real competition in it. Who got the best, worst prediction? Me. Yeah, I mean, it just didn't go to plan for Pakistan, did it? Their man England were definitely the disappointments of the tournament, but it's a prediction at the end of the day, you know. It's difficult to do before the start of the tournament, before you've seen all the teams play. And how many people predicted Australia to win? You know, not many.
Just Nick Friend, I think, by the sounds of it, which is not a bad shout from him, which does mean you have to go back and listen to his podcast, I think. It's episode 9, so go ahead and listen to, well, we broke down why England was so poor pretty much, and he then went and called that Australia were going to go and win the whole thing, and it stuck with it throughout the whole competition. I predicted England to win the whole competition, like Ayush, and I also predicted Josh Butler to be the player of the tournament. Neither went particularly well. I think they almost hinged upon each other a little bit. And I remember at the time thinking I kind of needed to pick an English player for player of the tournament if I predicted them to win it. In hindsight, maybe could have chosen a better option. Yeah, I just don't think really any of the English players really stood out, which is a bit of a shame. But I was somewhat pleased with my other two picks. Rohit Sharma, I said, would be the leading run scorer, who came second with about 600 runs in the end. And I also went for Shaheen Shah Afridi to be the leading wicket taker, and he came sixth with 18 wickets. Not too bad, I guess, I'd say, from those two. But I think we do have to admit that Ayush's predictions are probably the best, just because of the Virat Kohli shout. He won it so convincingly. But Sonny, we didn't have any of your predictions written down. What did you think before the tournament? Who were you predicting to win? And who were you predicting to be the leading run scorer, leading wicket taker, and player of the competition?
To win the tournament, I would say I was backing India, because we were at home. And yeah, same as Ayush, for the leading run getter, Virat Kohli, no one else. this isn't in hindsight. I'm just saying that this is my gut feeling that if there's a tournament happening in India, then I'm backing Virat Kohli.
On the wicket front, I assume you weren't picking Mohammad Shami, considering he wasn't even starting for India at the beginning of the tournament?
No. Mohammad Shami was the breakout star of the tournament, I'd say. He came in four matches late, still ended up being the leading wicket taker and taking one more wicket than Adam Zampa. And also his bowling strike rate is quite impressive. Just, I think, 10 point something, which is marvelous.
Given the way India, you know, India fielded the side of the Asia Cup, it was clear that they were preferring Siraj over Shami. And you just expected that they would go that way for the World Cup as well. But who would have thought that Mohammad Shami would come in and eventually be even better than Jasprit Bumrah throughout the tournament? And I mean, he averaged 10 at the end of everything. And that's just incredible. I mean, he could have easily had at least 30 wickets if he would have played from the first match, given the way he was going in each and every match.
It is absolutely crazy that a 33-year-old is probably the breakout star from a tournament. But I mean, who knows? He might be there in 4 years' time leading the line. I think it would be mighty impressive if he does. I mean, I'd say for me, the breakout star was probably Madushankar on the bowling front, Madushankar. But I think batting front, it's got to be Ratchan Ravindra, hasn't it, Michael?
Yeah, definitely. He was, I mean, he's not in the ICC team of the tournament, which is an interesting one. A lot of people saying he's been robbed there, but yeah, three centuries. I think he's the first New Zealand player to score three centuries in a tournament. Crazy, amazing story. I mean, I used to say in the 2019 World Cup final, he was watching it in a pub or something. So yeah, it's a nice story. And he looks like he's nailed on to take that Kane Williamson's number three spot in the batting order for the next decade, you know. So amazing tournament from him.
One last question before we finish off our World Cup coverage. I shall start with you for this one. Do you think this Indian side is the best World Cup team to never win a World Cup or to not win the World Cup? They were completely unbeaten until the final.
Without a doubt. I mean, this has been... I've never seen a better limited overs Indian side than this one. You know, I think the 2007 team that won the T20 World Cup was close. They were really powerful. And 2011 was good as well. But this team was much better than the one in 2011 that ended up winning the World Cup. And that just shows you, right? I mean, you can be the best team in the world and not end up winning if you don't play the biggest moments well. Australia, I mentioned this earlier as well. This World Cup, not even the 2021 T20 World Cup, which they won in the Middle East, they were not close to being the best team of the tournament in both. But again, Australia, they know how to win the big moments. They know once they get a few wins under the belt, they know how to get the job done. And yeah, definitely with India, I think it is the best Indian team to have not won a title. And well, if this team couldn't win the title, it's difficult to see them win, you know, the ODI World Cup the next couple of times as well. But as we've seen in cricket especially, you don't have to be the best team at the end of the day. Maybe there comes a World Cup where, just like what with England in 2019, they lose 2-3, look like they may not even make the knockouts and they end up going winning the entire thing. So, but yeah, it's going to be, we've been seeing it with the social media posts and the dressing room vibe as well with this Indian team after what happened yesterday. They are really heartbroken and this one hurts. This one definitely hurts because it was there for the taking and they just couldn't get the job done. So probably the best Indian team I've seen in this format, and yeah, they couldn't win it.
What do you think of that, Sunny?
Yeah, I have similar feelings. Like, this was the team. Like, they've been in such incredible form all throughout the tournament until yesterday. So there was a lot to celebrate about back home as well when they were winning with such huge margins. Either they were they cruised through the league stage and then we avenged the New Zealand loss back in 2019. And I thought that we would win this. Like, I was backing, I hadn't written Australia off completely, but I was hoping that we would win it. but sadly it wasn't to be. And yeah, I probably agree with Ayush that this is arguably the best Indian team to have never lifted that trophy.
Can you see this Indian team coming back and winning in 4 years' time, or was this their one chance and it could be all over for them?
Yeah, if it was like an end of an era with Rohit Sharma, kind of, he won't be there. And it just feels like in this tournament, it was just perfectly set up for them to win. And they were by far the best team. They had the best coach, best players, you know. It was written in the stars for them to win, but it wasn't to be. That's at the end of the day, finals a lottery. And, you know, they came out as the losers. So, yeah, I think, yeah, of course they can bounce back, you know, they've got some good young players coming through. Interestingly, I've just seen that Surya Kumar Yadav has just been named as the captain for the T20 side against in the series against Australia, which starts on Thursday, which is crazy, by the way. Yeah, so that's interesting. So there's definitely going to be some changes, like there is with so many of these countries, you know, New Zealand, England, India, Pakistan, they're all going through these end of an era. So it's exciting. I'm excited for 2027. It's going to be a good one, you know, with all these new players coming through, and yeah, be interesting.
No, there's a long 4 years, I think, until we get there, but it'll be exciting, hopefully. And I mean, who knows how much actual ODI cricket they'll play over those 4 years. It might be couple ODIs here and there and just the Champions Trophy, or maybe some teams will have to start taking a bit more seriously. That was all we have time for on this episode of the One Short Podcast. We'll be back in just a few days to go through our team of the tournament, where we'll somehow have to try and come to consensus about what our lineup looks like. So make sure to stay tuned until then, and we'll see you guys next time.